music, news, entertainment. It's all right here. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
On the show this week is Emmy Award-winning actor Eric Martsoff from Days of Our Lives. Eric talks about what led him to a career in daytime, what his days are like on set, how he stays in shape for those steamy love scenes, and if he plans to continue playing Brady Black for the long haul. Up next is Grammy Award-winning group The Mavericks, chatting about performing on late-night TV and the inspiration behind their latest album, Mono. We wrap things together with singer-songwriter Dan Wesley and his latest single called Shake. We're very excited to be joined on the Kelly Alexander Show by Emmy Award-winning actor Eric Martsoff,
who stars
on Days of Our Lives. I love that I get to say that, Days of Our Lives. I've never interviewed a Days of Our Lives actor before, except for Eileen Davidson, but she was on Young and the Restless at the
time.
Ooh,
well,
so.
God knows what show she's on.
She's on so many.
She's like a little frog, and she goes on many different toadstools. Is that what they're called, toadstools?
Yes.
She just jumps and jumps and jumps.
Yes.
And every toadstool she's welcomed on because she's terrific.
Is she on your show now? I can't keep track.
But this interview isn't about her.
No, it's about you. It's about you. It's all about you.
No, she's awesome,
okay,
actually.
Awesome.
So you interviewed her?
Yes, and she was great. But I've never had a Days of Our Lives actor specifically. I've only usually done the Young and the Restless people, so I'm very excited to have you on.
I'll see what I can do. I'll try to represent my...
You will do just fine on NBC.
Emmy Award-winning 50th anniversary show.
That's right.
It's pretty crazy.
Before I take you down Days of Our Lives path, though, I have to talk to you about your career, because if I've done my homework correctly, you went to college not for anything to do with entertainment.
Nothing to do with entertainment.
So why did you do that and then leave it?
Well, Dad was a lawyer.
Okay.
And when you grow up in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, you don't really believe that going to Broadway or going to LA and being on a television show is anything tangible, mm-hmm, whatsoever.
Okay.
So, but being a lawyer is tangible,
yeah,
in Pennsylvania. So I went to Dickinson College in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, small liberal arts school. Graduated honors in political science with an emphasis in mass media, politics, and constitutional law.
Nice.
I still remember that. I can rattle that sucker off, man. I worked hard for it, so I deserve that. But I've never really, unfortunately, done anything with it.
Okay.
And it was graduation day where my father looked at me and he said, "So what are you going to do?" And it was one of those adrenalized decisions where I looked at him and I said, "I think I want to go to New York for a year. And not go to law school. I think I want to go, like, act."
Wow.
And without a beat, he just went, "Okay.
Nice.
That's great. Good. You light up on stage. I know how much you love it. Go enjoy it. Go have fun." Well, that year turned into a career. So.
Awesome. So now you've done, I know you've done radio stuff, which is exciting to have you on with a radio announcer.
I have.
Would you ever pursue, like, radio or hosting? Because I know you've done some of that as well, apart from your acting career.
How funny you should bring this up, actually, because I just threw my hat into the hosting arena.
Okay.
It's something that I've always loved to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that I've always felt comfortable doing.
Mm-hmm.
But a couple years ago, agents and managers didn't want you to be a host because you were pigeonholed. If you're a host, you can't be considered a serious actor.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a serious actor, you can't be a host or you can't do commercials. And that was the mentality years and years ago. Nowadays, you see Halle Berry doing makeup commercials. You see Matthew McConaughey doing car commercials. There's no more pigeonholing.
Mm-hmm.
There's room for everybody to do everything that they're interested in, and there's no reason not to spread your wings in other genres and other activities in this industry. If you want to do it, go do it. So I've made a very prominent decision to host, and I've done a couple events in the last couple weeks. They've gone over very well. I just edited a hosting reel.
Yay.
Last week.
Is that
it's on ericmartsoff.com.
Yes, I watched it this morning.
It's just cute. It's mostly me getting interviewed. That's the problem. Because I haven't been on this side as much.
Right, we should let you practice then. But you're already good at it. Because didn't you do something when you were on Passions? I saw you do like a hosting thing.
I did DirecTV's first live call-in show.
Okay.
Which was essentially me for 12 episodes imploring people to get DirecTV so they could continue watching their favorite daytime drama, Passions.
Okay.
And it worked. People actually, DirecTV was very surprised and happy about it.
Nice. Now, I wanted to ask you about Passions and just the soap genre in general, because I remember, I've been an avid soap fan for years and years and years, and
oh,
I remember...
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. It started with General Hospital.
That's okay. I'll still stay here. I'm going to continue to talk to her.
But I still love Days of Our Lives.
We love General Hospital.
But in the mid-90s, there was like, I think 16 soaps. You know, there was the big guns.
I think there were like 402, actually.
Probably, if you add in all the telenovelas.
402.
But, you know, there was Passions that came out too. And then, you know, Loving. There was all these other ones. And then all of a sudden, they just started to drop off. And obviously, you were on Passions and that happened as well.
What was it like being on a show, you know, when the genre in a way started to decline? Was it scary for you? Did you think the genre in itself was going out the window?
Oh, it was a fright fest. Absolutely, I thought the genre, I thought it was dying. Mm-hmm. I had put all my eggs into this soap opera basket, so to speak, for lack of a better phrase, and I was watching what I love go away. And that's the way I now feed my kids. I put cereal on their table mm-hmm. through soap operas, mm-hmm. and that's what I know. Mm-hmm. And the worst part about it, and this is dying slowly, this stigma, that once you do soaps, it's hard to break into other things. A lot of casting directors, if you've done soaps, they consider you a soap actor. And it's such a rough thing because you can ask any primetime folk mm-hmm. Who have done daytime guest stars how hard it is.
Yeah.
It's incredibly difficult. Sitcoms do about 3 or 4 pages a day. Mm-hmm. We'll do 90. We'll do 100. So you have to be so sharp. And I think those stereotypes are being brought down slowly but surely in casting offices around the world because we show up and we know our stuff.
Mm-hmm. And
that's important.
Can you let the listeners know, you know, what a sort of scene is like? Because I know you guys have like to do it in like 1 or 2 takes and then bang, you're on to the next scene, right? Like you don't have a lot of time to get this right.
No, double takes are almost frowned upon.
Okay.
You know, Al Pacino, if he does a movie, he probably gets 30 to 40 takes wow. for a scene. You know, one of those is going to be good. That's just, you know, through mm-hmm. the odds. But the time is so important now. We're doing 2 episodes a day as opposed to 1 now.
Wow.
In order to save money, mm-hmm. we are off 20 weeks a year.
Wow.
When I started soaps 14 years ago, we did 1 episode a day. You know, the way in which viewers watch it, it's 1 a day. Mm-hmm. Now they give us a lot of vacation so they can close the studio, save money. But they're like, can you guys just work twice as hard, please?
Wow.
We're going to do everything we've been doing on a quarter on a nickel.
Can you give us an idea what an actual day is like on the set? Like what time you come in and is it like a 12-hour day, especially if you guys are doing 2 shows a day?
Well, here's the rough part about what I do. And what I do is not that rough because I get to like sleep with women and say
and
words
off that
on
nice
camera.
Body of yours. Well, it's true, he's hot.
No, that's the hard part, having to like keep that camera ready.
Gym.
It's like, really? Shirtless scene? Oh my God, I can't eat for a week. But the days are completely different.
Okay.
My week is completely different from week to week. There is no regularity,
okay.
There is no common schedule. And I get my schedule the night before.
Wow.
My friends call me up. Can you have lunch tomorrow? I don't know. I'll be able to tell you at 7 p.m. tonight when I actually get my call sheet for tomorrow morning. So it's hard with the family. It's hard to plan. It's mm-hmm. hard to plan vacations.
Mm-hmm.
Life in general is pretty nuts that way. But I'm kind of used to it now.
Now, what is it like being on such a show like Days of Our Lives? It's been around forever. You just mentioned the 50th anniversary. You guys have an amazing cast. A lot of the actors have been there forever. You've been there since 2008. Is it a real family? Because I think a lot of viewers want to know if you guys are super tight off screen as well.
It's a great question. It is a family. It's unlike any other job in the sense that you're emoting with each other all day. So mm-hmm. you get to know each other very, very well. You know, no matter how hard I try to keep Brady Black, mm-hmm. Eric is going to seep into there,
right.
You know, and that's what you're supposed to do as an actor. When you're hired, you're not hired as Brady, you're hired as Eric. They mm-hmm. want what you have to bring to the canvas. So we're all meeting each other very quickly, learning so much about one another, and that's a family. And we fight, you know, it's not a love fest all the time. We get, with all that material and all that stress and all that desire to want to do it right the first time,
mm-hmm.
it's hard. And it's just like any other family, like at Thanksgiving, there's forks and mashed potatoes that are thrown across the table sometimes. But then right after that, you're hugging, you know, and it's, we hug as hard as we hit.
Nice.
And I think that's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think a lot of casts, oh, we all get along all the time. It's so great. No, they don't. That's ridiculous. That's a utopian idea. But that's what keeps our machine running, and that's why it has been a real family for this long. It's been 50 years. You have to remember, most shows are on maybe 2, 3, 4 seasons.
Yeah.
The majority of shows.
Mm-hmm.
To be on for 50 years is an accomplishment that you should not take lightly.
How do you feel as a daytime actor when it comes to other shows? Because again, we talked about how before there were so many of you guys, there were shows here, left there, and everywhere. And now it's kind of like the 4 big guns, GH, Days, Young and the Restless, Bold and the Beautiful, at least in North America.
Sure.
Are you guys sort of protective of all of your colleagues because the genre has gone south so much. And when you see each other at the daytime Emmys, how important is it for you guys?
You hit it on the head. Once again, you seem to know what you're talking about.
Trying.
I noticed a huge change a couple of years ago at the Emmys. We actually had them in Vegas. And that was right around when ABC had just thrown the axe down on All My Children and One Life to Live. Mm-hmm. Just in a huge, I mean, that was
crazy.
Scary. That was like, oh my God, that's our San Andreas fault. Just, we're all going away. And that night at that Emmy Awards, there was so much camaraderie. There was no competition. There was no talk of our actor being better than yours, our show being better than yours, mm-hmm. our makeup department. It was all about camaraderie. Because we all knew that we had to pull together because we all, this was our livelihood. Mm-hmm. We either join together now or we sink.
Yeah.
And what do? When you're on a boat that's sinking, you all work together to keep it above water. And I think that's what everybody has been trying to do ever since. Don't get me wrong, there's still that, you know, competitiveness that's always going to live in the veins of the body of this genre. But I think we all understand what we have to lose.
Now, you've been in the genre for a while. We talked about your time on Passions and now on Days. You're now an Emmy Award winner. What did that feel like to be an Emmy Award winner for Best Supporting Actor on Days of Our Lives? Which I understand,
it's ridiculous.
Correct, was that you're the first daytime supporting actor for Days. Like, that must have been...
I'm the first guy ever on Days of Our Lives to win in that category, Best Supporting Actor. It was unbelievable. It was, for a guy who's in soap operas, it really doesn't get much better than that. That's mm-hmm. the pinnacle. Mm-hmm. That's it. Mm-hmm. You know, and for a guy who used to watch these things with his mom, she used to make me watch Young and the Restless. And I used to be like, why are Nikki and Victor fighting all the time? What is wrong with this dysfunctional couple? Why don't they just break up?
P.S. They're still doing
it. They can't break up because they have a baby and she's hiding it from him. I'm like, what? I'm like a 7-year-old kid. I'm like traumatized by these crazy stories. And there I am, you know, up there accepting this award. And it was. I don't know. You can see I'm kind of, mm-hmm. I'm usually not a loss for words, but I don't know how to explain it because it completely was unexpected. Mm-hmm. Did not prepare a speech.
Yep.
There were gentlemen in my category that had been nominated many, many times. This was my first nomination. Why would I get it? It goes against everything. Mm-hmm. But once again, you know, man makes plans and God laughs. He threw me a curveball and said, get up there. And it was a beautiful day for me.
And how did Mama feel when you...
My mom?
Yeah.
She just cried her eyes out.
Nice.
She cried her eyes out. Actually, I have a videotape of her. She was in Pennsylvania watching online.
Okay.
The 1 year that I win, it's online.
Yeah, they didn't televise it, yeah.
Really? Seriously?
Yeah.
Like, can I do a do-over?
Yeah.
Can we just televise the whole thing? But I think she watched the thing. And she went, oh shit. She started swearing. It was so atypical of her to do that, and she just starts swearing uncontrollably. I'm like, oh my God. So she obviously was legitimately surprised mm-hmm. as well.
And now, for the rest of your life, you get to be introduced as Emmy Award winner Eric Martsov.
I do.
You're a little
I?
Red. He's a little red. It's good, though. It's good.
Do you think all these people in this lobby know that?
And now
I should change the name on the reservation
of
my room, actually.
It's true. We should do that.
I'm thinking about it.
I have to ask you this because I've been fortunate to interview some of you male actors from the daytime genre, and you guys always have to look like superstar Venus rock star gods with the abs and everything. Can you please tell us how much work it is? Because I feel like it's a lot of training going on to keep that for TV, because TV just adds 10 pounds anyway.
It does add 10 pounds. And yes, we know what we signed up for as men. We get it. Okay, they're going to ask us to gratuitously take off our shirt. Like, oh, I better fix this sink. You don't need to take your shirt off to fix a sink, but
yes,
it's written
does.
That way. No, it gets harder as you get older. I mean, I'm not a spring chicken anymore. Mm-hmm. I got to work 4 times as hard to look like what I tried to look at. But you embrace it. You know, mm-hmm. you have to be okay. And that's the beauty of aging. You get more comfortable with who you are. Mm-hmm. When you're a kid, you just pump so hard. You know, I would do, and when I was on Passions,
right,
we would all just be sitting around doing push-ups until we just fell over. It was just ridiculous. If you go back and you listen to the scene, it's like, Teresa, I love you, but I... They're like, cut, what is wrong with him? Like, he was doing push-ups, he can't breathe. Like,
oh, okay.
I just can't talk. You know, that's not the point. And it's the characters that have thrived and that you remember mm-hmm. are not always the most beautiful, to look at. They're mm-hmm. the ones that you, they're the actors. They're the ones that bring it, that mm-hmm. you invest in. Because artwork is really nice to look at for a while.
Yep.
It's really pretty. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's nice. But you don't keep coming back every day to look at the same artwork. Mm-hmm. You keep coming back because there's something in it that moves you. And there's something about it that is interesting. And that's what I think is lost sometimes with some of the younger actors these days. They think it's all about how they have to look.
Right.
No, it's not. It's more important to bring out what you got in there. That's more interesting.
Are you guys very welcoming when a new cast member comes on, or do you razz the crap out of them? Like, I want to know that.
A little bit of both, okay. Actually. We actually have, lately, we have a bunch of young bucks coming in our hallways right now. And I don't know what's going on with youth today. I mean, they are all sweet as can be. Mm-hmm. But, and I'm a father, so I feel entitled to talk about this, but there's a little entitlement thing going on, like,
true.
Oh, come on, this isn't so hard, whatever. And then they get in it, and they realize that what they've signed up for, that this mm-hmm. is a job. Mm-hmm. And the idea that it's easy to be on a soap opera is something that just needs to go out the window.
Now, I saw that you tweeted yesterday, because it just came down, when our listeners will watch this, it'll be out for a little while, but the decision in the States with regards to marriage equality for the LGBTQ community, and I saw that you were very supportive of that.
Oh, God, yeah.
What does it feel like to be on a soap that actually has, a gay storyline? Not all the soaps are doing it.
No, they don't, because they're afraid they're going to lose viewers, mm-hmm. because a lot of the demographic that watches soaps don't necessarily want to see that thing. We're still a country that is working towards that decision that we do. We want everybody to just be for it, but that's mm-hmm. not the case. Mm-hmm. So for Days of Our Lives to take one of their larger demographics and say, you know what? This story's important anyway. Mm-hmm. You may not want to watch it, but we're putting this on and we're going to show it because it's our society today. Mm-hmm. I thought it was brave, and I was very proud to be a part of that storyline. Still am. It's still on there. And these mm-hmm. guys are running with it, and I think they've done a terrific job. And I was so excited to hear about that. You know, I've worked with the gay community for so long. I was on a Broadway tour, for God's sakes. We got some gay community out there on the Broadway circuit. I don't know if you heard that.
I feel. Yep.
But no, I was on a bus as the only straight man for about 3.5 years. And they're just a beautiful bunch of people. And they just want to love. Nice. Let them love.
Excellent. Now, I want to throw a curveball at you. Not that you would want to switch places, but if you could switch places for a day with any other soap actor, whether it's on Days, YNR, GH, who would it be?
Any other soap actor.
Yeah, just for a day, just to see what it would be like. I feel like you want to say Victor from Young and the Restless.
Does it have to be on Days of Our Lives?
No, it doesn't have to be. You could say anyone else.
I would love to have Victor's lines.
It's true.
All right. I think secretly he is another writer that writes for him.
Just for him.
Because he's just all, he's got the little, I don't know, he's clever. He's very clever when he speaks. Maybe it's just the way he speaks. It's not the line. I don't know. It would have been fun to be Sammy Brady for a couple of days too.
Right.
Just to be, just when you think Brady Black is emotional and crazy, enter Sammy Brady. She's a, hydrogen bomb that goes off every day. And that's fun. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I would have to say I'd like to be a combo of different characters. I'd like to put them all in a blender.
Let's see what happens.
Like a Vitamix and just hit the button. Just be that character milkshake for a while.
Nice.
So any choice I made would never be wrong.
It's true. Now, before I let you go, are you going to stay on Days forever? Because we'd like you to. And do you have any, I know you're doing some hosting stuff coming up, but is there other aspirations? But please stay on daytime.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. I have said this before. I'll say it again. I don't know why the heck I would ever leave Days of Our Lives. Mm-hmm. I love the job. I've been an employee of NBC for 14 years. They've always been good to me. Mm-hmm. And I have a little loyalty issue as well. I tend to stay with things and ride the train. I don't like to jump off trains. Mm-hmm. I like to ride them to where they stop.
Okay.
And that's just kind of how I'm wired.
Awesome.
So, yeah, I'll stick around.
Yay.
I'll stay on it for a while.
Emmy award-winning actor Eric Martsoff right here on The Kelly Alexander
Show.
Thank you.
Say that again.
Eric Martsoff, Emmy award winner on The Kelly Alexander
Show. So cool. Never gets old.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show. Follow us on Twitter @KAlexanderShow.
Up next is a Grammy Award-winning group that got its start in Miami, Florida. They blend a multitude of genres of music together to create their unique sound, including Latin, country, pop, and rock. The Mavericks have recently released a new album called Mono and have appeared on late-night television with Conan O'Brien and Seth Meyers. We're joined by guitarist Eddie Perez. Eddie, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Kelly.
So before we start talking about the band, I actually wanted to ask you how you personally got into music.
Oh, boy. Way back then. You know, I was always surrounded by music. My father is such a music lover, and I'm talking all the stuff from, like, rock and roll to jazz to swing to Spanish music to everything in between, you know? And so growing up, I was always around it, and it was always something, you know, that was around my family as well. You know, I had a few different cousins and aunts and uncles that played instruments, and when I was a child, I remember having family get-togethers, and later at night, when all the kids would be out, you know, trying to cause trouble, I'd be in there with the adults inside the room while they were doing their little, you know, guitar pulls and whatnot, and so I can't ever really remember a time where I was not involved in music in some way, you know, and I took to the guitar quite easily, actually. You know, I was about 8 years old, and it was just something that came natural to me, and over the course of interesting adolescent years, it was also a way for me and my father to connect on a certain level. So I think in some respects, that's really where it started, you know. It was the connection of if you don't know how to speak to somebody, if you're a little uncomfortable or shy or whatever it is, for me, that was the vehicle for me to be able to express myself. And, you know, I think that's where I first got bit, and that's really where it started.
How did the band actually come together, and when did you join? Because I know you didn't sort of start right off with them.
Well, you know, the band I came into the band in 2003. We had about 2.5 years where we went out and played shows. We did a couple of records in that time. But the band originated in Miami in the late 80s. And it was a lot of how the guys tell it to me is that they were all playing in different bands down there in the Miami area at the time when there were venues that supported, you know, live music and whatnot. It's a very different thing today, of course. A lot of that kind of music and clubs and venues have closed and whatnot. So the opportunities are not there for musicians per se, as much as they are for, like, you know, DJs that spin, you know, they don't even spin records anymore. They put computers up, you know, and flashy light shows. And that has its cool thing too. But the band was just basically, they were a bunch of guys in different bands. I believe that Robert Reynolds and Paul Deacon were friends that were kind of in the music scene already. And Raul was just getting started with writing songs and playing out, you know, and singing live. But they came together as friends first. You know, they got to know each other through the Miami music scene.
Now, it's been said that the Mavericks have been defying categorization for years. Would you agree with that statement? And how would you actually describe your sound?
That's an awesome question. You know, it's funny. We don't set out to... I can only tell you from my experience. I don't believe that this band has ever really set out to make a certain type of music. I think that the influences obviously show in our music. And I think that if it allows us to color outside the lines a bit, then it's a difficult task to take on because, you know, the music business being what it is, you know, it's important sometimes, I think, to belong to a genre. You know, people need to know where to find you, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so for us, we've always felt that that's so confining. And so we... Luckily, with the graciousness of support of our label, this time around, they're so wonderful. They say, "Hey, listen, just make us a Mavericks record." So that's a rare thing these days. So it's not like we set out to defy the genres. We just, I guess you can say, we kind of make our own.
Mm-hmm.
I think if anything, it's just good dance music. And I think it has world appeal, and Raul's been touting the phrase, we're a world music band. And I guess part of that is true. So, you know, even for us, though, it's really hard for us to define it, too. So we always have a hard time answering that question. I hope I answered it.
I think you did. I wanted to ask you, because you guys are sort of like, you know, you embrace so many different styles, and I think everyone knows you for that. Do you think that your fan base is actually sort of wide open as well? You know, and is that why you think the loyalty is there for you guys? Because, you know, the band has been together for a while. I know you guys had a break for a few years, but it seems like your fan base is as loyal as ever.
Wow, I got to tell you, yes. Thank God for that. It's been so lovely to see a bunch of people that I got to know the first time, my first time around with the Mavericks back in 03. But not only is it that, but there's now what they're saying is there's a whole crop of people now that are getting turned on to our music through other people that not only have been fans in the back past, but now we got this whole group of new people that are just now discovering this band. And so it's been a wonderful journey for us to these past 3.5 years to not only put more love behind what we're doing, but we are now like really starting to see that come back at us. And I can honestly say that we're probably having more fun now than ever, and not to be overstating that, but it really is for me a celebration every time we get to go on stage and see all the fans and engage. And, you know, sometimes we'll go out and we'll meet people. Sometimes people will see us on the street in their town, you know, trying to have a, you know, having a bite to eat and whatnot. They'll walk up to us. And I think a lot of times they think that they're surprised to see how open and just out there we are with everybody. So for us, it's about communicating.
How important has it been for you guys to be on shows like a Conan O'Brien or a Seth Meyers? Because in my opinion, it's giving you great exposure to new audiences.
Well, it's been a wonderful thing. Yes. There's, again, I think a lot of people are coming to us for the first time. You know, they missed us the first time around. We're also getting some of the things where, you know, some younger fans have come up to us and say, oh, when I was a kid, my mom was playing that music in my house. And so there's that stuff, too. But, yes, it exposes you to a whole different audience. I mean, TV is still, it seems to be, so powerful, you know. And so through that medium, you get to reach a lot more people. And I think that's why people are always trying to vie for that certain position to be in. For me, it's always a thrill to be able to play on a TV show. I mean, playing on a live TV show, it's nerve-wracking, but there's something about that that I absolutely, I'm like a moth to the flame, you know? and that's what it's like stepping on stage. You know, you're going into it willingly and with all these nerves and all this anticipation, and it's a very exciting thing, and I think that's what I celebrate every night. I get a chance to do that, you know?
Joining us on the show is Eddie Perez, guitarist for The Mavericks. Make sure to check out their website, themavericksband.com. Eddie, your latest album is called Mono. What's the meaning behind the title? And, you know, is the album a collection of songs or is there like a theme?
Well, you know, as usual with The Mavericks, they're, you know, it means a lot of different things to each one of us, to tell you the truth. When we first started making this record, we would start our day in the studio by, you know, listening to old vinyl records. You know, I started bringing in my few select things, kind of try to get your headspace right, try to get yourself in the mood. You know, you put on your heroes. You know, I think we were listening to Ray Charles, and then we were listening to the Beach Boys and the Beatles, and our producer and engineer Nico Bolas, he told us, he was talking to Raul, we had a private conversation. He goes, man, you guys should just record this thing in mono. He says, those records sound so great. You know, mono meaning everything comes through just one channel. You know, it's quite an artistic endeavor to try to fit all that sonic space in one channel. And so we were grooving on those old records and the way they sounded. And so it was just kind of a remark that Nico Bolas made to Raul. And it was a remark that Raul made to Nico. He said, yeah, okay, yeah, let's do it. And we all thought he was joking. We didn't think he was very serious about it. And when I remember when we were finished and it was mixed, we all got the copies. We were listening to it. We all said to ourselves, except for Raul, of course, and Nico, but we said, hey, you know, is this the way this is going to stay? Is this, you know? And he goes, yeah, I wasn't kidding. We recorded this in mono. We're releasing a mono record. And he says, I think it needs to be called that.
Wow.
And so, you know, it started out really being inspired by all the stuff that we love to listen to. You know, we're all such vinyl junkies ourselves. You know, every time we go into a town, we always try to visit the local vinyl record store or the used record store. You know, we just love that stuff, you know, like it keeps us connected to our influences, and it keeps us connected to what we love. And that's really where it started. But then since then, it's morphed into, you know, this idea of singularity, of us all being one in this together, you know, mm-hmm. less disconnection and more connection. And so the spirit of Mono to me represents, you know, a one world, a one language, it's a singular existence. So again, it means a lot of things to a lot of different people, but it originally started out as the concept for the recording process and wanting to do something in that vein. Raul had been wanting to record a record about this for quite a while. And so we finally just thought, hey, let's see what happens. And hopefully it works out great. I think it's been a pleasant surprise for us so far.
You guys have won, you know, a lot of prestigious awards, including a Grammy. Does it matter to you guys to get recognition from your musical peers?
It always matters, you know. To me, it's a wonderful thing when you meet somebody else that you admire and somebody else that you're seeing is having a really great time and fortunately had a beautiful, successful career. You know, when you have those moments where these artists come up to you and other people in the business think, God, your record never leaves my, you know, my CD player. Your music, I tell my people about you. Whenever that comes back from those sources, it always feels good and it never gets old.
That's awesome.
But again, you know, we don't really necessarily kind of set out for any specific agenda other than to just try to achieve something that we feel emotional and very connected to, enough so that we can go out and perform it live and do tours, you know, because it's, you know, it takes a lot to bring the music out on the road and to tour, you know. It's a lot of travel and it's a lot of sacrifice away from home and the people that you love. But that's how much we love what we do and how much we look forward to it. So we, you know, we try to please ourselves first, because, I mean, we got to go out there and do the work, mm-hmm. you know. And in doing so, we're hoping that everybody feels what we're feeling when we're making it, because I can honestly tell you it comes from an absolutely place of pure joy. That's what we're trying to hit.
It obviously, you know, to me sounds like you guys have a great party time by yourselves. It's not like you need anyone else. But is there a band or an artist that you guys would love to just, you know, do a track with and have a good time?
I would love to do a track with Snoop Dogg.
Yes, you should. Oh, my goodness. That would be perfect.
I tell you, I'd even love to do one with maybe one of the Marleys.
Okay.
You know, something like that. I mean, something so outside that, I mean, it's, who knows? I mean, you can never tell. I mean, Bruno Mars would be a great one to do one with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a little idea kicking around about maybe checking in to see if we should, you know, do some duets with people. I don't know. You know, maybe that's something that might come down the pipe, you know, in the near future. Who knows? But those are good questions. I don't know. There's so many different styles of music out there that I'm so into. You know, other than just the music that we listen to on, you know, vinyl records, or, you know, the classics. But that's a good question. I think I'm going to have to think about that one a little more.
Okay. And before I let you go, Eddie, I did want to ask, you know, now that the album is out, what's up next for you and the band? Is it tour like crazy? Is that the plan?
It is tour like crazy, and try to have as much fun and try to bring as much joy as we can to people, quite honestly. And that's what I set out for every night for me. When I take the stage, I'm wanting those people to feel every bit like they're in my house and they're going to have a good time and they're going to party and have a wonderful time that they'll remember for a long time to come.
Awesome. Eddie, thank you so much for your time. We wish you all the best of luck, and you're welcome back on the show anytime.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate it.
That's Eddie Perez, guitarist for the Mavericks. Again, make sure to check out their website, themavericksband.com.
Hi, this is Eddie Perez from the Mavericks. You're hanging out with the Kelly Alexander Show.
It's not at all my favorite time. On Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Click on KellyAlexanderShow.com.
Our next guest is a singer-songwriter who hails from Vancouver, British Columbia, and who has just released his 7th studio album, I Am Your Man. Dan Wesley is here to talk about his career, new album, and his single, Shake. Dan, thank you for joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show.
How's it going?
Great. And, you know, I'm so excited to sort of learn more about you, and I wanted to let our listeners know actually how your musical journey in life began. Did you sort of know as a child that music is where you were headed?
Yeah, I think I grew up in a pretty large family. We were always running around. We went through many Volkswagen vans, my family, and going to soccer practice or hockey practice or whatever. And my mom always pumped tunes in the van, and I just remember music was always surrounding us. So at an early age, I just kind of really liked it. You know, when I was growing up, Michael Jackson was kind of the big thing. I remember us kids just jumping around with our jean jackets with zippers on them and singing along with candlesticks as microphones and stuff. So early on, it was always a big thing for me, and my parents always put me in piano classes, and ukulele was an instrument that we learned in elementary school. So yeah, I started early, and I'm really thankful for that.
You mentioned Michael Jackson as an influence. Have there been other artists that really sort of stick out to you that you find have sort of maybe influenced how you sound a little bit?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I grew up in Vancouver area. So when I was growing up in the 90s, you know, the whole Seattle scene was happening like 100 miles from us. So it was really cool. You know, Pearl Jam's one of my favorite bands of all time. All these 90s bands from Seattle were kind of getting huge. And I was about 10, you know, 8 or 9 or 10 kind of thing, right? When I was kind of starting to get into music quite a bit. So, you know, a lot of bands like that were really influential. But more than anything, I think just having an open mind with, you know, the genres and stuff like that as time went on, I got into so many different types of music. And I think that really was a big determining factor rather than just one band, just listening to punk rock and classical and rock and roll to reggae and everything. So I think it all kind of was an amalgamation.
Now, I'm not sure how many instruments you actually play. I know you mentioned the piano, and I'm assuming obviously guitar, and you mentioned ukulele as well. Which instrument sort of lends itself, you know, the most to you?
Definitely the guitar. I mean, I started playing the guitar when I was 17. I was singing in punk rock bands, and I was really not very confident up there just with a microphone and a mic stand, and I kind of grabbed the guitar more necessity out of just not really feeling comfortable up there, and then started learning chords and writing my own songs. And guitar has kind of always been my go-to instrument just for expressing you know, myself and also just the way I write songs.
Joining us on the show is singer-songwriter Dan Wesley from Vancouver. Make sure to check out his website, danwesley.com. Can you talk to us about the album, I Am Your Man? What do you, I sort of mean by that, as the title says, and was it actually challenging to self-produce this album? Because I read that you did.
Yeah, I mean, this is the seventh album I've made in the last almost 10 years. I guess it's been 9 years since I started this project in 2006. So I've done, the first few albums I did was self-producing, and then I worked with a handful of producers over three albums. And it was such a great learning experience, and I really was able to kind of take what I've learned in those experiences, and this one being on my own label and everything, just kind of take what I'd learned. And I know, to me, the studio is just like a playground. It's so much fun. And we recorded this album, I Am Your Man, over two different sessions a year apart. More out of the idea where I was going to do an EP at first with five songs, and that's what I did. And then as time went on, I thought I'd like to kind of make an album. So two different halves of the album, and but they really complement each other a lot. And I'm Your Man is just a song on the album that I thought that would be kind of fun to kind of have that as the album title, but I can't put my face on there. It's kind of like a little, it's just kind of strange to say, I'm your man, and have your face on the album. So I ended up having this picture of my son, Finn, who looks absolutely adorable with a microphone. This picture I took of him, and he looked just kind of like, he has this little cheeky little look that he's giving you. And I thought that would be kind of cool. So that's how all that kind of came about.
Now, with regards to your career and you know, how it's been going, I would say that in this day and age, you know, and especially because you just mentioned as well that you have your own record label, you don't only get to be an artist, you actually have to be, you know, a business person as well. How many, you know, or how much time do you have to devote to try to make both ends work? Because obviously it's, I think people don't realize that it's, you know, it's like more than a full-time job.
Yeah, in this kind of industry, which, you know, your phone always rings, whether it's in the middle of the night or the emails come in the middle of the night or whatever. When you wake up and you go to bed, you're still thinking about it. And it's not for everyone, but I really enjoy it. And I've had a couple different managers over my nine-year career, and I've also self-managed myself a couple times. And I'm self-managing myself for the last 3 years, and I enjoy it. I think it's fun. I mean, the business side is a really big part of it, for sure. But you always have to keep the music and just, you know, just being true to yourself with where you're going in the musical direction and not follow trends or anything. That's at least what I've been trying to do. And as long as you have that down and you're making sure that that's at the top of the priority list, then I think it's totally doable for an artist to take control of their own careers and kind of steer their own path. And for me, it's been really invigorating with this release that's coming up here. It's been a complete, like, 360 for me, where I started like selling albums out of the trunk of my car and, you know, producing them and paying for myself. And I'm not selling them out of my trunk of my car right now, but it's definitely like all the way back to like doing it yourself and putting in all the hard work and all those kind of things that labels have done in the past. So I think it's a good opportunity right now for anyone to do that.
You've been described as a groove-based acoustic troubadour. What does that statement mean to you?
I have no idea.
I thought it was pretty cool.
I have no idea. Actually, I saw that and I was like, oh, okay, that sounds cool to me. I don't know. It's kind of funny with music, or even just in the press, you always need to label something a little bit, you know, and just to have at least a direction to go in. And I've kind of always looked at myself and not having like one, you know, one sticky label on it. Like, it's album to album, I always try and change, and I always try to make sure that I'm pushing myself. And as an acoustic troubadour, okay, that sounds good to me. But for more than anything, it's just, for me, it's just music, and it's all about the search of trying to find that song that is going to be your next best song, you know. And I don't put anything out unless I think it's the best thing that I can do it, you know, do. So I guess it's just perseverance and stuff, but the acoustic troubadour. That sounds pretty cool to me.
I think you should get a T-shirt that says that, because I just think that's the coolest description I think I've ever read. I have to ask you about that.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, please get that on a T-shirt. The current single is called Shake. Was that an easy choice to release this track, or did you sort of go back and forth a little bit with regards to what was going to be released as a single?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've got a team around me that has been really helpful and just kind of figuring out what the best move is for that going forward. I mean, you look at them and they're all like your babies kind of thing, but there's definitely songs that stick out more. And Shake to me just kind of seemed like a fairly accessible song for a lot of different people. And that's kind of my goal, is I'm not going after a demographic, or I'm just trying to make music that feels good and sounds good, and that people, if they hear it, will have a reaction to. And Shake was definitely one of the ones that I felt had a good shot of people reacting to and just enjoying. And with the type of weather we're about to hit here, I mean, I'm in Vancouver and it's been pretty, actually really nice lately. And I'm getting so stoked for summer. I think that Shake is a perfect accompaniment to the summertime vibe. So.
Now, speaking of the summer, from what I understand, you are going to be touring, during the summer months. What can fans and new fans expect to see on stage from Dan Wesley?
Predominantly, we've been touring as a three-piece forever, and we do shows sometimes with a fourth or fifth member. And this time, we're coming out with a four-piece band, which is really exciting to me. It kind of frees me up a little bit, and we have my friend Mike Kinnias, who plays keyboards and guitar as well. So that's exciting, because there's a whole new element involved in that. But more than anything, it's just a fun show, just try and get people into the show, and it's just a good time for people to get together and come and release some energy from their busy weeks, because, this day and age, everyone's busy, so busy all the time, it's hard to kind of get out and catch things and stuff, and, I'm just trying to have a release for people.
Now, I know you mentioned earlier on you have a son, and obviously you're probably very well ensconced in Vancouver. Is there ever any desire or thought that you might have to move, like, south of the border or overseas, or do you think you'll always be based out of Vancouver?
No, I would love for the opportunity to move around. I mean, me and my wife are such, we love traveling, and I think it would be great to, Vancouver will always be home, but I think it'd be great to just try something different at some point. So I've definitely thought about going down south, but also, like you say, I mean, Europe would be awesome as well. So we'll see what happens. I mean, my son is two. We're having another child in August as well. So our family's expanding. But I can see over the next 3 to 5 years definitely trying something different, just even for the sake of just a lifestyle change.
Now that you do have this growing family, Dan, has the weight of that, obviously it's a very joyous thing, and congratulations on the baby that's on the way, but knowing that you have like a mouth to feed and another mouth to feed, has it made your career become more important in a way?
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, more than anything, I mean, you wake up with these well, soon to be kids, and your wife every day, and it's just, I don't know, it's a dream come true. So it's one of those things where you just want to work as hard as you can and put in the hours and just try your best for them, and you just want to succeed as much as you can. So I've definitely been really lucky with music, where I've been able to make a living doing music and support my family and do some exploring and have a place to live and all these kind of things that, I don't take it for granted, where I know a lot of people struggle and I struggled at the beginning for sure too. So I'm just really lucky, the fact that like, this is my job and it's the best job, and I couldn't imagine not just making music here.
Dan, well, thank you so much for spending time with us on the show. You're always welcome back, and best of luck with the new album and the single.
I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
That singer-songwriter Dan Wesley from Vancouver. Make sure to check out his website, danwesley.com.
Hey, this is Daniel Wesley, and you're listening to The Kelly Alexander Show. Hey-oh, hey-oh-oh-oh, I come from over here. Hey-oh, hey-oh-oh-oh, I come from over here. Hey-oh, hey-oh-oh-oh, I come from over here. Hey-oh, hey-oh-oh-oh, I come from over here.
from over here. Everything you do, if I could hold you now, I'd hold you so. I would not let go, but be alone. Shake for me, shake for me, shake for me, shake for me. Hey oh, hey, hey oh, oh, I come from over here.
The Kelly Alexander Show. Follow us on Instagram, Kelly Alexander Show.
We really appreciate you spending time with us on the show this week, and a big thank you going out to my guests, actor Eric Martsoff, the Mavericks, and of course, Dan Wesley. Here is your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from Marla Gibbs. I truly believe that everything that we do and everyone that we meet is put in our path for a purpose. There are no accidents. We're all teachers if we're willing to pay attention to the lessons we learn, trust our positive instincts, and not be afraid to take risks or wait for some miracle to come knocking at our door. Please make sure to follow us on all of our social media, on Twitter, at K Alexander Show, on Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show, on Instagram, at Kelly Alexander Show, and our YouTube channel, where we feature all of our interviews, youtube.com/Kelly Alexander Show. If you've got any comments or questions, drop me a line at Kelly@KellyAlexanderShow.com. Have an amazing week. You and I will chat soon.